All right. Go, Gogs.
Welcome to Movie the Podcast. That's right. Movie the Podcast. We are still doing it. We got what we get this week? This week,
The Salton
Sea. We watched The Salton Sea, a movie. And so that is that. It is.
Good night, everybody.
Yeah, no. Val Kilmer was our link betwixt the island of Dr. Moreau and this film. This was picked by Sean, I believe.
Yeah.
And it's something.
This is my Nathan Fillion bro days. I have a lot of criticisms. This is definitely an odd film.
But I don't hate it. Like, I feel like we're going to get into it, but I feel like 18-year-old me is like, that's a really smart and provocative film.
Go ahead, Sean. I'm sorry.
No, I said it's like Way of the Gun or a Give Him Hell Malone. Yes. It's better than both of them.
Very young man's movie.
What was the second one you said? Way of the Gun and what?
Give Him Hell Malone, the Thomas Jane noir vehicle.
I don't think I ever saw that.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's what we watched.
Anywho.
We watched a movie named after a very salty body of water in California. And like, it's like this is one of those movies that shows you that the dirty parts of California. There's a lot more dirty parts of California than I think.
It's dirty to a point, but like I mean we'll get into it, I guess. But like the opening scene where they're like he's in his like drug pit. It like they're like the like sexiest drug addicts like I've ever seen.
The hottest.
Like, when they walk out of whoever's house, it's like, oh, that's like a nice piece of property. Like it was like stucco and with like terracotta tile shingle roof.
Yeah, fucking MODOK is his best friend, which is funny.
I don't know, and it's kind of strange because like when this came out, I had no concept of meth because we grew up in Baltimore, so
yeah, you only knew about crack.
Yep, people love that meth.
Oh yeah, meth's great. Highly recommend. Not really. What did y'all watch this week? No Alec this week because he's working like a dog.
Opioids was what we were familiar with. So I'm like, what the fuck is wrong there?
Yeah, right. Anyway, we'll talk about Salton Sea here in a minute. But what did y'all watch this week? Gogs, did you watch anything?
I did. I watched two films.
Two films?
Two films. I watched. I'm gonna start with one. And then I'll do the other one because that's how it works.
That's usually how it works.
I finally got to watch. So I've been listening to because we know reading's for idiots.
That's true.
I've been listening to that book, The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. So then I was like, let me give the movie a Guy Ritchie gander. Yeah.
Didn't know it was based on a novel.
So the novel is interesting because it's the novel's cool because it's the true story of basically how they invented like the SAS and Churchill was like, hey fellas, we gotta like do some underhanded shit because Hitler's a dick, and everyone got like pissed about it, but he was like, yeah, we're gonna do like some covert ops, and
that's exactly how Winston Churchill sounded.
We're gonna bend the rules and the rules of warfare a little bit. And so like there's some interesting, like I'm like more than halfway through the book, there's some cool stuff that they did, like they really did like neat shit. But then Guy Ritchie took a little bit of artistic license to that. It's fine, it's fun-ish. It's like a tamer British Inglorious Bastards. Like it's also, I think, yeah, it also the, is kind of like
the trailer look like. I mean, it looked just kind of like a, like it just looked like a knockoff of Inglorious Bastards, quite honestly.
And like not for nothing, like the story, the true story is actually pretty fucking harrowing and cool. I think it would have been better if they'd stuck more to the source material. Like, mm-hmm. the whole movie is, spoiler alert, is based around one mission they did. It was called Operation Postmark, where they snuck in, like, all right, so like Africa, right, has nations, and they were all aligned with different factions or whatever. Oh, and
hold the phone. There's many countries in Africa.
News to me.
Holy shit! I thought it was just one. I thought Africa was the country.
Yeah, and
you know, it's sad to say that there's probably at least a handful of people that honestly think that.
So for those of you at home playing our home game, multiple nations make up Africa, many of which were either conquered or aligned with the Nazis. Then there was Nigeria, maybe, was British controlled. Thank you, imperialism. And then there was some Spanish controlled shit, and Spain was kind of playing like both sides. They were sort of like not. They were kind of fascist dicks, but they weren't fully aligned with them. They were trying to see. They're like pulling a Mac from It's Always Sunny. Whoever was on the winning side, that's where they would fall at the end of the day. But anyway, they had this island in off of the coast of Africa called with this port, and this port is where they refilled all the U-boats. And that's how they
your fucking Baltimore is coming out hard this episode.
Yeah. And all the U-boats is what's keeping the Americans out of the fight, right? So they're like, all right, boys. In real life, they're like, all right, boys. They sent like 12 dudes down there in the dark of night, and these 12 dudes stole three full big-ass Nazi and Italian boats of the harbor with this intricate, like Ian Fleming worked for the British government, and he helped develop the cover story because they were like, it was going to be the first deniable operation. They're like, what we're going to do is we're going to steal the boats, and then the boats are going to be found adrift, and then the Brits are going to capture them, and they're going to say that the people defected. There was all this, they didn't fire a shot, like no one died, like, and they stole these monstrous fucking boats in the middle of the night. Like, it shouldn't have worked. It worked.
That's awesome.
It was super cool. In the Guy Ritchie vehicle, they steal one boat, and they do it under the cover of all of the gunfire in the world. Like, these four dudes like an entire Nazi base. Like, so it's fun to watch. And while it's like barely historically accurate, it's like, I think the real story would have been better, but
Yeah.
Like, I like that big dude from I guess he's Reacher. And
we all love big dudes.
And I like, what's his name? Superman. He's fun in it. And like, everyone's very British and very, like, they're doing like the most crazy, heinous shit. And they're just being very, mind if you unplug me from this generator where I'm getting actively electrocuted? Like no, everybody's just fucking so Guy Ritchie about it. Like, I don't know. Like, I'm waiting for Sean to get back, but I'm going to stand on, I still think I need to revisit. I think Rock and Roll is still my favorite Guy Ritchie movie now. And then
that movie,
like Snatch, and then like Lock, Stock, and then everything else you can have. But this is fine. It's fun. It's not historically accurate. It's just, you know, it's like, but like, if you wanted to watch this movie, you should watch Inglourious Bastards, because if you're gonna be goofy, silly,
I love Inglourious Bastards. I mean,
right.
Hot take, that movie is fucking perfect. I love that fucking movie.
Like, if you're gonna be silly about it, like, just be go fucking full on nuts. Like, don't even like tether it to something real. But
Sean's back.
I was saying, Sean, I was like, I think my favorite Guy Ritchie movie is still, it might be Rock and Roller. Like, I think that's probably his best work.
That is his best movie. Did anybody see the one with Colin Farrell? Like, I see clips of it all the time, but I've never actually
God,
watched
the
it.
Gentleman. Oh, it's
yeah, the bad,
horrible, dude. It's so
bad. No.
It's so, no. You see the best scene, I see it clipped all the time. The best scene in the whole movie is when he's in that like diner and those kids are fucking with him, and then he like starts like dressing them down. It's so fucking bad. And like, Hugh Grant is the bad guy in it, and he's fucking bad because like, I feel like this was like, I mean, I don't know, like throughout his entire career, but you know, Hugh Grant was mainly known for like his kind of like, aloof. Chased, like, romance guy. So in this movie, he's the bad guy, and like every other word is like fuck and cunt. And it's like, okay, like it's a little, it's like a fifth grader just like wrote the script because he's just like
he's just walking around saying boobs.
I sent Sean this fucking crazy ass clip on TikTok. It's some weird like janky CGI movie that was on Tubi, and it's just this guy that's going damn shit, fuck, yeah. It's like, that's what it said. That's like the movie. It's horrible. I hated it. I absolutely fucking hated it.
Well, anyway, it was, so that was, so, you know, Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, fine. Book's better. So,
there you go. Did you ever see that interview Peter Jackson did talking about Christopher Lee and Lord of the Rings? It's like, oh, have you ever heard what it sounds like when you actually stab a man? Oh, because it doesn't sound anything like that.
Christopher Lee's a real one. Yeah.
For real.
Wasn't Christopher Lee in SIS?
Or whatever the precursor to that was. MI6.
He was like a certified badass.
Christopher Lee was the fucking man.
But yeah, so there's that. Then the other thing I watched was I guess Violence Demo Havoc.
Nice. You watched it. What'd you think?
From a violence perspective, S tier. like really top quality stuff. Like from fucking cover to cover,
it's in your Christmas canon now.
It is now a Christmas movie. Yeah. Tom Hardy's great in it. Oliphant's great in it. Like all that. I think here's my biggest complaint about it.
There's a big butt coming here.
Ready? I like big butts.
They're the best.
I think that the movie, I'm looking at Gareth Evans's other films in this genre, right? Like your Raids, your Raid did the Night Comes for Us, right?
No.
Okay.
No.
So like, I feel like this movie almost suffers from having too much plot. Like it doesn't need as much plot.
I kind of agree.
Like it's got.
And it's very bare bones.
It's too much and not enough plot at the same time. Like it's just like there doesn't need to be this much plot. Like let's just we can A to B this thing. Like you didn't need to meander so much. Like drug deal going back.
I think it still kind of suffers from having to be a noir movie, and I love the movie. So like, but I kind of understand your criticism because like noir detective movies and Hong Kong action flicks, like now I was going to say, well, John Woo does it, but not to this level of violence.
Like having like the, like, I'm not going to spoil it, but just like Tom Hardy's whole backstory and their whole squad. And then like all of like the ins and outs of like the triple crosses of trying to get to the root of whatever. And you got like three competing factions trying to get to the end. It's just like, it gets a little busy.
It's almost like Training Day told strictly from Jake's perspective. It was a better movie.
And it was, Forest Whitaker's fun in it. Tom Hardy's great in it, but it's just like, there's just.
What about that harpoon gun, though?
That harpoon gun was bananas. There's just too much plot. Like, if you just dialed the plot back a little bit and kept all the insane amounts of violence.
That's too much tuna. You stupid bastard.
What's the meaning? What's the meaning of this? Like, this is preposterous. It is crazy go nuts, but fun. It's still probably I haven't seen much this year, but it's probably still my favorite movie thus far of 2025.
Yeah, same.
In the new release category. Give Havoc a look. It's why, if you like The Night Comes for Us, if you like The Raid, this is here. You're here for this.
I love it. I absolutely loved it.
Yeah. I'm actually surprised that you were a little like, cool. Like, again, I get what you're saying and I don't disagree with you. I just figured you would be like, you know, all gogged up about it.
Oh, I mean, like I was like enjoying all of that, but in a lot of ways, I was kind of like following all the plot, like, almost did a disservice. Cause I'm like, but why? It left me going, well, why would you? And I shouldn't be doing that with this movie. I should just be sitting there the whole time going, oh.
Yeah.
like in the opening bit where they fucking launch the goddamn dishwasher out, or the wash machine out the back of the truck. Like you're playing Lucky and Wild at the Cranberry Mall arcade back in like the early 90s. Like, that's insane. Like
that car chase is really good too.
And then like this weird like CGI city that I don't completely I don't know where it takes place. I don't know what somewhere where it snows sort of. Yeah, the town. It
takes place in wherever Max Payne takes place.
You're right. It's kind of very, very Max Payne.
Oh, it's not like it's a Max Payne game. It's basically like if they just called this Max Payne, I'm like, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. Eventually, yeah, probably. Yeah,
it's more of a Max Payne movie than the actual Max Payne movie.
Although, yeah. I'll die on the hill that Max Payne trailer is still excellent. The trailer is awesome. The trailer
rules.
Yeah, the movie is
garbage.
Oh, but that is the two. Oh, when I started, as I said on the group text, I'm halfway through Expendables.
God bless you, sir.
Yeah, that why? this is a this. I don't even know. Like, in what I've watched so far, like, I don't get it. Like, I just, they are.
I treat movies like I treat fucking, if Ronda Rousey's in the room, I'm out. Like, there's just no reason.
there's no Ronda Rousey. There is a fucking,
Is she not in this one?
No, there's a Megan Fox.
Shit. They ruined my joke.
But yeah, I know, but it's okay. But, but like,
you know you're in bad shape when you don't ask Ronda Rousey back.
Like, 50 Cent shows up and everybody goes from literally he walks into their hangar base thing where they operate out of, and like he's like, hey everybody, and everybody's like, hey, that's Lucky Day or Easy Day or Last Day,
whatever. Barney and Lee Christmas.
Well, so they're like, who the fuck? They go from who the fuck is this guy to two beats later, they're like, why is he all bent out of shape? What's wrong? Like, you wouldn't even know. Like, you wouldn't even have the established. You wouldn't even know he's bent out of shape because you don't know what shape he is to start right. with. So, like, what are we doing? And, like, Randy Couture is wearing a beanie but with a snapback on it, and that doesn't make any sense to me. They are going through
Kadhafi's. Beanies are hats known for their unadjustability by nature.
They're driving through Kadhafi. They're fighting the guy from the raid, like he's the bad guy, so that's cool.
Which
he's
guy
got a from pair the of, he's got a pair main of sharpened,
guy?
Yeah,
main guy from
Eco the Uways,
yeah,
or whatever,
yeah, Eco Uways, and
more about him when I start talking.
Tony Jaa is also in the film. Eco Uways is where he's using some sharpened tonfa, which I've never seen before, and that's kind of fun.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, like they're like driving their the CGI. I think I said in the group text that I saw. Look like that reboot show. It looks like dog shit. Like they,
oh, man, you're talking about fucking reboot. Holy,
like
shit.
they are driving. Fucking they have reboot. You know those like redneck Rolls Royces that people like to mud around in. Those weird like 4x4 open frame kind of Mad Maxy looking like dirt mobiles. That's like
kind
of
yeah.
They got those. I know they're what you like mean, yeah. armored in the front, but they have no sides or doors. So like from like a situational perspective, like you're gonna catch it. And they got like 50 cals mounted on the top, and they're like going through buildings, blowing shit up. And like the whole time they're having like conversations.
You're doing it again though.
But they're having
You're making it sound pretty good.
They're having conversations like there's conversations that no people would ever have ever, and then they're taking that to like another level. And at some point, spoiler alert, once again, close your ears, people. In the first mission,
this fucking movie,
Stallone gets checked out, so he's dead. But they have his like, and they cut to the most graphic scene of he got Aunt Beru'd, like he is in the front of this airplane, just roasted. And I'm like, that's not even implied. And then they took his like crispy hand and they took it back to Expendable Bar, and it still has this ring on it. And they're like having
crispy,
like a
his crispy. I shit
you not, like that's evidence. Like that's not supposed to be there. And like they're having like a biker wake for them, where all of the expendable groupies are pouring some out for.
Is it like fucking Jackie's funeral in Cyberpunk?
It is. It is. But that was done tastefully. Yeah. Like I teared up at Jackie's funeral.
Yeah.
The whole time I'm watching this, I'm like, I see some slag just walk around going,
"You British now."
She's like, "I miss you, Bruno," or whatever the fuck his name is, and I'm like,
"His name is Barney."
Barney. I'm like, "What are we doing?" Like the opening scenes of the movie, like before the violence, they're like he picks up Barney picks up Lloyd Christmas from Megan Fox's house to go retrieve his ring that he lost at, I think, the same Expendables bar where he thumb wrestled a short man, but then World's Strongest Man, Eddie Hall, gets involved for some reason. Like,
Because of his relative bigness.
Like, what is happening? Like, this is, like, the cash grabbiest thing. I'll finish it, but good night. Like, it is...
it sounds it fucking is... awesome, to be and, honest.
Like,
but...
like, why is 50 Cent here? Like...
Oh, see, now you're talking me into it even more.
Known action star 50 Cent.
And what that's what it says. Like, when I was thinking, like, it was like on the cover of the in the thing, it was like Curtis at 50 Cent expend affordables. And I'm like,
well, Blood in the Sand was fun. He's Blood in that. Blood in the
Sand is amazing.
I'm just
make saying, a Blood I in mean, the Sand movie. Where my diamond?
Where my
man?
Skull?
Where my skull? That's it. Where my skull at?
He was getting paid in a skull.
A Qatari. Before they were giving away airplanes, the Qataris were giving out Curtis Jackson diamond encrusted skulls as payment
for summer jam festivals,
and they put a tack vest on DJ Who Kid. What are we doing?
Video games used to be good.
Yeah, right. But anyway, and I'll finish up Expendables. But that's the 2.5 things I watched. Are Sean, you somewhere with the signal now? Are you good?
I haven't gone. We're having last.
I'm just asking, Sean. TJ, you go.
Oh, I can go. Or who's going?
Sean, go ahead.
I watched most of the first two seasons of Righteous Gemstones. Alex writes that show's really good, and it's Jody Hill. So it's also like weirdly violent and unnecessarily so. But the only movie I watched besides, like, I watched a couple 30 for 30s, but I think, you know, sports documentaries are always great. I watched Thunderbolts Asterix.
Yeah. Oh, you did watch it.
Yeah, I did. I took my mom to see it. So I suggest, and I think TJ's mom's like this, like, Gogs, I'm not sure about your mom, where they're just excited to be out. Like, they don't care what you're doing or what you're seeing. It's like, I'm just spending time with my son. So, like, if you don't have a small child to see these movies with, I suggest you see them with your mother. she's just like pumped about the seats and like snacks and shit. So, and she's seen like none of the movies. So she has zero context for anything that's going on.
Right? Yeah.
I texted TJ. The movie's not good, right?
Oh, no.
But I've never seen a movie at odds with itself in the way that it is. Because it's like, and I was like, you know, maybe being a little hyperbolic, but it's like somebody was trying to make Possum or like Jacob's Ladder. Movie. And they're like, no, you have to make this dipshit Marvel movie. And it's like, I want to make Jacob's Ladder. And they're like, well, you can have a little bit of Jacob's Ladder as a treat.
That's such a weird pull. Like, I need to watch it.
You'd have to see the movie. Because the way they handle the Sentry and the Void is like, pretty compelling, honestly, especially really? The Void. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the movie sucks. It is like I told TJ it's a cross between Jacob's Ladder and it's just like fucking Black Widow 2, which is not a movie anybody wanted.
Right.
Florence Pugh's adorable. Like, I love her. She's a lot of fun. The movie, it's just not funny. I don't care about U.S. Agent or Ghost or fucking anybody. Julia Louis-Dreyfus, besides the fact that she looks just like Tulsi Gabbard, is kind of wasted in the movie with that gray shit. For whatever reason, I had it in my head that she was the Black Widow's mom, but that was Bathtub. What's her name?
No.
Daniel Craig's
Black Widow's mom.
Rachel Weisz.
Yes, yeah, that's right. She was in Black Widow. That's right. I forgot about that.
And like the Red Guardian shit was cute the first time, but it wears thin very quickly. It's not good. Like, but there are parts of it that are like super compelling and interesting. But it's only for I don't know. Like, I'd love to see like how many drafts this script went through. I'm sure it's a lot. And like what this started out as and kind of where it ended up. Because
it's the people that made Beef made this movie, which is interesting. Well,
that show Beef rules.
That you like, I think it's the same writer.
This one's like less than that. But
I don't know. I just like, yeah, I think Marvel, like, I'm just kind of done with it. Like, I don't know. I don't know where they go from here. I didn't see the cat, but I assume it's
Brave New World was
like fucking tepid liberal politics. Really
good.
And like, it
was,
you know,
Brave New World was
when I say liberal, you guys, we know what we mean. And I don't just mean that they're, you know, left upset. Yeah. It's just like that very libby, like incremental change. And, oh, the president's going to do what's right. And I think I was talking to TJ a little bit about it. And I'm probably not the first person to say this, but like our current politics are so fucking beyond the pale that like everything just feels quaint. You know what I mean? Like, oh, the president made a bad arms deal with the Japanese. Like, oh, who cares? Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, if they built a screen.
The current president is like, we don't need to do due process. It's not that big of a deal.
No, he's got that fucking white vampire advising him. Like, fucking, it's gross.
He's a fucking Harkonnen, that guy. He looks like a fucking Harkonnen.
Yeah, could you imagine if they put, like, if the plot of Captain America Brave New World was just fucking a government Gestapo kicking in doors and stealing, you know, Honduran mothers and sending them to El Salvador? Like, nobody's, like, chowing popcorn to that. But, like, I think this movie's tracking to do even worse than Captain America. So I don't really know where they go
it's
from
doing,
here.
Thunderbolts is doing well. It's like...
Really? Because it was, like, at $200 million.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty good for what they're projecting.
I guess. I didn't know what the projection.
I don't know.
I just like,
I don't give a shit about. I don't give a shit about box office. I just see posts sometimes. I'm like, oh, okay.
But it's just like the only reason I care about box office with this stuff is it's like maybe at some point they'll go, okay, this is not working. Like, we need to try something else.
Yep.
And I think we've said it a million times. Go ahead.
Disney keeps churning out those fucking live action movies like that. That Snow White was like a huge bomb. And then they re-released it in theaters over the weekend. So it's like, obviously, like, I don't know. They're just going to. Who knows?
Did you see that unhinged fucking statement from Francis Ford Coppola that they're re-releasing fucking Megalopolis because, you know, since the election and now everybody thinks it's brilliant or something. Did that actually happen? Did they put that back out in the theaters?
So here's the funny thing about that. Because you know me, I have to stay abreast of all the latest Megalopolis news. Francis Ford Coppola said he went out and said that he's not going to make it available on any streaming platform. Like, you can't rent it, you can't buy it, you can't stream it anywhere. He said the only way that you can view Megalopolis is if you see it at he's touring it like at like small theaters and like. Speaking events, and it's the only way you can watch it. Or you can just subscribe. You can email me, and you can get an invitation to my Plex server and watch it on that.
What a fucking
lunatic!
It's like, bro, you made Apocalypse Now. Just take a nap. It's fine. You're good.
You made Patton. Yeah. Sort of. That shit rules.
Yeah,
like, I don't know.
That movie is like such a fucking mess, and it's not even a fun mess.
I couldn't get through it. Like, I got a third of the way through it, and I just fucking tapped.
Well, I saw it in the theater the way Francis Ford Coppola intended. So maybe you didn't like
it. So bad it killed David Lynch.
You didn't get the proper theater.
He's like,
experience.
I'm fucking out of here. This is bullshit.
Yeah, I hope he didn't see it before he died. That'd be awful.
I don't know what's next. I guess they're doing some kind of like Avengers v Avengers, and then whatever this fuck. The Fantastic Four trailer looked okay, but it's like I don't care. I just don't give a shit.
I love the. I mean, we're getting a good Galactus, so I still have hope that that movie's going to be good, but we'll see.
Yeah, whatever. DJ.
I watched one thing. I watched this piece of shit movie called Ash. And it should have just been called Ass. It was so bad. It's directed by someone named Flying Lotus, who I have no idea who that is. It's always funny when someone has like a really pretentious like stage name, and it's like directed by Flying Lotus, and it's like when you're not like prevalent, like that doesn't mean shit to me.
No,
like a McKee situation.
I still don't know. Actually, I'm gonna look it up.
Unless
right
it's
now.
Their Christian name.
I doubt his name is or their name. I don't know. Their gender.
Are they a First Peoples? Are they? Is this their like?
Are they a two spirit? He means First Nation, like the Canadian Native Canadians.
Okay, so this guy isn't even like a filmmaker primarily. He's a record producer and DJ. So that explains why he has no idea how to make a movie. This movie is garbage. It is like the worst version of The Thing that you've ever seen.
Oh.
All it is like this hot chick wakes up in a space station and she has no memory. Okay. And it's all lit in like bisexual lighting. If you're familiar with that, it's all reds and blues. And like everybody in the space station is dead and she doesn't know why. And then Aaron Paul shows up and he's like, what's going on? And then you like fucking, then they piece together her fucking what happened. And like all terrible movies, it's all told in like flashbacks. I don't know. You know, it's funny, right? Like I've never made a movie. I know like the rules of filmmaking better than people that actually make movies. There's two things that you shouldn't do in a movie. You shouldn't over rely on two things. Fucking flashbacks and fucking voiceover, okay? Mm-hmm. It's just film writing. It's filmmaking 101. This whole movie is told in flashback. And it's so fucking... It is a prime example of why it's a terrible fucking story device. The movie is so... the pacing of the movie is such a fucking mess. And then the problem is, by the time the whole thing comes together, it's such a nothing plot. Because big surprise, it's just a fucking alien that's like a fucking, you know, like one of the goddamn, like The Thing. It's like, it gets in your brain and it controls you and blah, blah, blah. And it's so fucking terrible. And what's his name's in it? The guy from The Raid. And it's funny because I'm like, why is he in this movie? And then, of course, there's a scene where he gets taken over and does karate. I was like, oh, that's why you got him. This movie fucking sucks. It's so bad. Don't watch it. Like, I kept seeing people say that it was, like, super gory and the visuals were cool. Neither of those things are true. It's kind of gory. It's not gory enough to be memorable. And the visuals are boring. Again, the visuals are literally just, like, everything's just bathed in red and blue. And, like, the actual, like, stagecraft, like, the production design is nothing to write home about. I mean, this literally just looks like every... You know, this is every like post alien movie that you've ever seen. Like, there's just nothing. There isn't one original idea in this whole fucking movie. And it's just, it weighs on you like immediately. You're like, oh, this is the movie I'm watching, huh? Yeah. Like, it was, now, and it's watch short.
Lilycat instead.
The hell is that?
Lilycat, that anime from the 80s with the fucking evil cat on the space station or on the old spaceship.
Oh, you know? Yeah. Okay, yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, that's sick. So yeah, that's the only movie I watched. I want to use my time here on the podium to talk briefly about something non-movie or TV related. I'd like to speak about Clair Obscura Expedition 33.
Oh, hell yeah.
It's probably the best game I've played in a decade. I beat it yesterday. I think it's a fucking masterpiece. I'm not going to spend too much time talking about it because we don't talk about video games on this show, but it is one of the best. It is not really that often, but it's one of the best written video games that I've played in a long time. Like, I haven't had this feeling like this is on the same level as something like a Red Dead Redemption 2 or a Persona 5 or
Cyberpunk,
BioShock. Like, this is a incredibly dense, well-written, well-acted piece of media, and as far as the gameplay goes, it's incredible. Like, it's absolutely incredible.
They kind of took the turn-based system from like a Dragon and kind of iterated on it well.
Or Persona. I mean, I feel like it feels like they took. Like a Dragon or Persona or really any other JRPGs, like turn-based action system. But like, they make it active because there's like quick time events for almost every interaction. And then there's also a dodge and parry mechanic for when you're on defense. Cause I know a lot of people that play turn-based RPGs, they don't like it. Cause it's like you go, then they go. And when you get hit,
I don't think I could go back to a regular turn-based that didn't have that feature at this point now. Like, I think it ruined it for me.
It's a really great feature. I love the game. It's wholly, talking about something that was not original whatsoever in Ash, this game feels so fresh, so new.
But it very much wears its inspirations on its sleeve.
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Like it's like a Tarantino movie, kind like a good Tarantino movie. Like you know exactly where everything's getting pulled from, but like it's done so originally, and it overcomes the handicap of being French as fuck.
Oh, it's the Frenchest thing I've ever played. This game was made by fucking, ironically, 33 people, which is fucking insane. But yeah. it is a fucking masterpiece. It's selling like crazy. It deserves to sell a bazillion copies. Like,
and it's like kind of steampunk, and I still like it.
A little bit. It's kind of everything because, like, it makes more sense when you beat the game. They explain a lot.
Yeah. Well, you want to hear something that'll break your heart. So I'm like right at the monolith, like with where you first like get to the Paintress.
You're towards the end of Act Two.
I was on Reddit looking for something for a build and it was like, oh, because Mael is. And yeah, I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, in the middle, it just apropos of nothing, I'm like, fuck. And, like, I usually don't care about spoilers, but I was kind of...
Yeah, cause I had God, I'm sorry.
I had a theory, and without spoiling it, that three of the men in the game are all the same people from different timelines, but I don't think that's probably it. But, like, I thought kind of that's where it was going, because they all look kind of similar.
You're not... I mean, there is a connection there. You'll find out. Okay. You're pretty close to the end. If you're already at the monolith, you're pretty close.
I feel like I'm going too fast through it. And Gogs, like, you would love this because I know how you love shit that's just hard for no reason. Every fight, no matter what, like, unless you go all the way back to the beginning with a leveled character, is like you can get killed in every single encounter. If you fuck up one thing, I was telling TJ, it's like, you know, there's a parry and a dodge. Like, the dodges are a little bit easier. The parries are a little bit tougher to do. And it's like, if I miss the timing on the first one, I'm just ruined for the rest of the fucking encounter. And, like, the whole party gets wiped out.
And there are boss fights that are just dodge heavy. There's one boss fight where you literally, the only way you can win is to dodge all his attacks. Or to parry all his attacks. And like, it's hard as fuck.
The second Axon, there's so much shit going on. Like, when I finally beat it, I was like, and I don't mean to keep cutting you off, but I love this game so much.
You're fine.
You play with your main party, but if they die, you can bring in your reserves. And I had one reserve at this boss fight. It was like the duelist, the guy with all the swords.
That's a tough fight. Yeah, that's a
and real I tough brought fight. And it, like this never and it's really I love how they do this when they bring in the reserve team. It says the last stand of Expedition 33. So it's like, you really feel invested in it. And I beat it with the last character with like 2 pixels of health left. And I was that's my
fucking
God.
Awesome. Yeah. No, the game is a fucking masterpiece.
Like you get, and it's hard to tell exactly how much damage you're going to do. So you get in that last minute gamble. Like, I can use this like major attack or I can heal, but it's like, I got to pick one or the other. Cause I'm not going to get a chance to do both. Yeah. It's like, you just hope that attack finishes them off.
I've downloaded it, I still need to play it.
Yeah, you need to play it immediately. It's so good. I mean, I beat it last night and I immediately started New Game Plus. I want to play it again. I played the hell out of the game. Yeah. I was so over-leveled by the end of the game that, like, it's funny because there's some optional world bosses that still gave me trouble, but like when I got back to like the main story, I was mopping the floor with like the end game boss I killed in like no problem. But like there's this, I mean, you'll see it, Sean. There's a point where you start flying. There's this like dragon that flies in the sky that you have to fight, and it's an optional fight. The thing keeps it like will fight you, and then every time you're about to get a hit in, it will put up shields. And it's literally just chipping away at it. I was fighting that thing for 45 fucking minutes.
So I always keep Mael in the main party, and she's got that rule breaker thing where you can break all their shields in one attack. Because they'll like, Gogs, I know we're like going on at length about this. It's like they'll stack shields, and then like there's one boss where every time they hit one of your party, it adds another shield. It's like fucking infuriating.
Well, you can there's a pick though where you can do that too. Where every time you take a shield, your character gains a shield.
I was so engrossed in it, not paying attention that I didn't realize the pictos affected their stats, like their base stats.
And I was like, oh, that makes more sense.
And the Luminas. The Luminas do as well.
But it's a lot to manage. But the only thing, my only minor bitch about it is, and like, I think it's just because I'm so used to it not being this way, is there's no map when you're in the dungeons or the towns. So I'm like constantly getting lost. And it makes sense that there's no map because they've never been there before. But you're so used to something pointing to where the general direction of where you need to go.
I could have used a map, even like a world map too, because I was constantly, you have a world map, but you have to open another screen. Just give me a goddamn world map on the
right screen. Or at least like have them like record where you've been already. You know what I mean? Like that would help. But no, this game's so fucking good. It's you know, it's a rare feat in a turn-based RPG where you're looking for fights, not just a grind, but just because the combat's like so enjoyable.
Agreed.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's amazing. I highly, highly recommend everyone play it. It's
funny because they were interviewing the director because he's from Ubisoft and he's like, I would never be able to get this game made at Ubisoft or it would take 25 years. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and it'd probably be covered in microtransactions and all this other bullshit. Yeah, because all the gogs, I don't know if you know this, but all the developers that made this game, they used to work at Ubisoft and left and started their own studio.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
So they make like the fucking best game in the last 10 years and it's like independent. It's fucking great.
Well, Ubisoft sucks historically. Not a fan.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's everybody, right? Let's get into the Salt and Sea.
Let's. So this film.
God damn it. Sorry, guys.
This is a movie. That we watched, and it is opens with Val Kilmer
coming in cold.
Yeah, sorry, it's actually coming in hot. I'm trying to wrap my head around all those things that happen in this movie.
We haven't seen this in 2 weeks though, too. So that's,
yeah, you know. I watched it twice. Every time we put a movie off, I end up watching it a second time because my memory is so horrible.
Well, so homeboy is Val Kilmer is in there monologuing, playing a trumpet in a burning building. He's like, "I'm Bobby Jones. No, I'm not. I'm Tom Dickey, or I'm whatever my fucking names are." And then there's a picture of a lady, and you're like, "Then it's like, I bet you wonder how I got into this curmudgeon-y situation or what have you." Meth, and then you find out that old boy, likes meth, and he likes methamphetamines, and he does it with Mellish from Saving Private Ryan. Saving
Private Ryan, yeah.
And a Sarsgaard, one of them.
No, he's not a Sarsgaard.
He's a Sarsgaard.
No, he's got a very similar name. Hold on, I just had his fucking...
Peter Sarsgaard is his name. He's not a Sarsgaard.
Sarsgaard. You're right. Sarsgaard.
So him and Petey Sarsgaard are sitting there doing meth and just having a good old time. And meanwhile, he is also kind of like sort of working for with whatever he got jammed up, and he's working with that child molester who married that
he married that actual child.
Yeah. And a guy who is not Robert De Niro.
Anthony LaPaglia.
He's not young Bobby De Niro, and he is also not Tony Zaza. Well, I can't think of that guy's name.
It's not Anthony LaPaglia from Empire Records.
Andy Garcia, and it's not all I know this guy from is in Analyze This. He was supposed to be playing De Niro's character, and De Niro was giving him notes. Anyway, so these two dudes are like, "Hey, man, we're here to jam you up and whatever, take down meth folks." He's like, "All right, cool."
It is Anthony LaPaglia from the boss from Empire Records.
Well, there we go. And then he's like, "All right, well, that's fun. I'm going to go back to my shitty apartment where my neighbor's getting beat up.
God, I know what you know this guy from.
Go ahead.
You've seen So I Married an Axe Murderer 70 or 80 times, right?
Yeah, yeah.
He's his buddy that's like dating Debbie Mazar or whatever when they're
you're right.
The cop.
Well, so anyway, what's his name? Between doing meth and coming up with big ideas, he goes back to his apartment where Louis Guzman is beating up some lady, and that turns out to be just extra plot, superfluous to what have
you. Some lady who can't act.
Right. And so things unwind as things do, and you find out that, all right, these guys, that these cops, these dirty cops he's working with,
bunch of crooked cops.
Bunch of crooked cops. They've rolled over on him, or words on the street, and some Colombians are going to pull his dick out his ass or something. So he's got to figure out something to do with himself. So he's in the mix looking for a scheme when he's not breaking out his suit and trumpet in his apartment. So he goes to scheming. And he meets up with a BD Wong from CSI.
He's playing Jimmy Wang Yang from WWF.
He's like, it's like when Don Cheadle was selling stereos in Boogie Nights. Like, yeah, he's just cowboy. Listen to that bass. He is cowboyed the fuck up. And he's like, hey, man, I want to make a big old meth deal with you so you can get money and move away from the Salton Sea. And they're like, that sounds like a good idea for me. What am I have to do about this? All right.
I wish the dialogue was actually like this.
It's not far off.
You're going to have to go. You're going to go strike up a deal with most of Vincent D'Onofrio, not his nose, of course. And you're going to go figure out if he
can sell you. Pause this real quick?
Yeah.
You rolled over like possibly my favorite scene in any movie where they go to buy eight balls from this local drug dealer.
Oh my God. Yeah. This scene was incredible.
Oh, I'm sorry. Pardon me. So yeah, they're tweaking, but they want to continue to tweak. This is earlier. So him and Sarsgaard go see this guy, Johnny, who's got like a lady, and he's making a lady sandwich in his bed. And
it's ladies' legs sticking out from between the mat, betwixt the mattress and box spring.
It's incredible. Yeah. Yeah.
And she's like flutter kicking and screaming. And he's like, pay her no mind. Check out my double barrel harpoon gun. Do you want some meth? And so then they buy some meth. They almost get harpooned. That's who he rolls over to the cops. He's an informant.
Pause one more time because I got to get to this because this line has been burnt into my head. Like mama ringing the dinner bell, where the drug dealer is all tweaked out in his underpants, holding the harpoon gun, turns to Val Kilmer and Sarsgaard, says, "Pardon me, but I am the ocean."
Shit's wild. So anyway, he flips over to the dirty cops, and they bust that dude up literally and figuratively because they try to arrest him and then his brains are going down a sewer. But that's the way it works sometimes.
Yeah.
So meanwhile, he's got to be on the lam. So he's got to get himself a little scratch. So he talks to BD Wong.
Oh,
and then he goes
hang
out.
Hang on. Real quick. I'm sorry, Gogs. I've seen this movie too many times. He also decides he needs to protect himself from the Colombians, so the movie stops for the Drebin cutscene from Metal Gear Solid 3?
Yeah.
Or no, 4. Oh,
4.
That scene was kind of fun, though.
That scene rules, and it comes back. It's a literal Chekhov's gun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a wild moment later. So anyway, so they go, he buys a gun from this child who knows everything about guns.
And he tells them very specifically how many rounds each weapon holds.
Yeah, and that does come back. So
yeah.
So he buys an 8-round .357 snub nose.
Is that
revolver.
Real? I meant to ask you that.
I believe it is, but it's very loud. So
your hand gonna hurt.
Yeah, I bet that thing's a little jumpy. So he buys the pistol. He goes on BD Wong's behest to set up this drug deal so he can get like a trillion pounds of meth and pay $8,000 a pound or whatever. And they're like, all right, cool.
Trillion pounds.
We're going to go, we're going to go make this happen. And then
you also neglected to say what Vincent D'Onofrio's name was, which is
his name is Kuber. Because he snorted too much meth and his nose got cut because he got caught in the honeypot too many times. with the meth, and he's got a badger he feeds people's penises to.
He's my favorite.
He looks like a ghoul from Fallout.
Yeah,
yeah, because he has no nose. It's fucking hilarious.
And he puts it on crooked later, which is fucking hysterical.
Yeah, yeah. He's like without a doubt my favorite part of the movie.
Are you going to talk about how we're introduced to this guy, Goggs?
Because
this is another scene that's never left my memory.
I'm trying to remember. I'm trying to. So
they pull all the Pooh Bear scenes. Two pigeons being placed into an RC car. One of the pigeons has a pillbox hat on.
They're recreating. I'm sorry. Yes, they are. He pulls up to the meth ranch. Yes, where Pooh Bear and his associates are recreating the Kennedy assassination with a bunch of pigeons that have been duct taped together in an RC car. And it turns out it's historically accurate, so that's pretty
good. At one point, they're like, there had to be a second shooter.
It's like the third shooter.
Yeah. Prove the theory, like they're doing their own research.
They're doing a Mythbusters. Somehow this hat stays on the pigeon the entire time.
So now, they become buddies. They're like, all right, I'll be back to go buy more meth from you shortly. Let me go see BD Wong and also all my tweaker friends. And also, let me have a flashback about my wife. And so there's some wife flashback. I'm like, oh, this guy's life was better at some point. And
he only is attracted to women who can't act canonically.
Yes. Meanwhile,
how much better would it be if he put on that pork pie hat and the trumpet and just started playing like Real Big Fish shit real loud?
What I was hoping for. Yeah.
He just starts skanking. So now he's still intertwined with his shit neighbor. She's just whatever. She brought it on herself. So then
it's a drive situation.
It is very drivey, but like less sympathetic. And yeah. He takes her out for coffee, and then they get to know each other a little bit. And he's like, I can solve your problems for you, maybe. At some point, there's a heist scene where what's his name? His name's
is it Adam.
Adam Goldberg is talking about a heist that they're going to pull off that's all done by weird flashback where they're going to steal Bob Hope's fecal matter because it needs to get tested on a weekly basis. It's a weird cutaway.
It is apropos of nothing and adds nothing to the film, and don't understand why it's in there other than the fill time.
It is just like a weird, like, hey, wouldn't this be fun? So there it was. So it's like, listen.
And it's also shot in a way where you're not really sure what actually happened or not.
Yeah, it's goofy. Yeah. At some point, he's like, I'll set up Louis Guzman with some crank, some gack. And you can get out of this relationship because I know some dirty cops. So he tries that, but the addict that lives next door just keeps the crank. So then Louis Guzman doesn't get got as much.
Oh, you said addict. I thought you said addict for some reason. I got fucked up.
And that's the problem with this movie. This movie was written with and then.
It's like
when you're trying, when someone's like, when like a kid's telling you a story and they're trying to find ways, instead of a deus ex machina, it's just several small machinas and there is no god, and they're just and-ending their way out of it. Like, they're like, oh, and so more to that to come. So at this point, the movie's silly but kind of competent, and I'm like, oh, this is all right, well, you know, this is interesting, right? And then BD Wong is setting up. He's like, all right, Tom Hollyfield, or whatever the fuck your name is, I'm going to give you some of the money, not all of the money, and you're going to get a sampling of the crank from Pooh Bear, and then, you know, we'll do you right. He's like, all right. And then he leaves.
All right.
And then the crooked cops have their NFL Films parabolic microphones listening in on this thing. And they're like, hey, man, how come you didn't cut us in on the deal? And he's like, you told me the Colombians were going to take my dick out of my teeth. And they're like, that doesn't matter. You work for us now, boy. So we're going to set this thing up and you're going to bring down Pooh Bear and we're going to bust him and take all that money. Like, all right, fine. I'll do that. So now the movie takes a turn.
It gets serious.
You get a flashback to when his name is Danny Parker, but it's also something else. And he's like, him and his lovely wife, they were at the Salton Sea buying methamphetamines when he goes to take a piss and the whole place just gets myrtillated. He catches one in the shoulder, which I did notice earlier, his tattoo had like a sunburst around a bullet wound. It was like, oh, that's kind of fun.
Can we talk about those tattoos?
His Brock Lesnar-esque tattoos.
Bro, those are like some of the worst fake movie tattoos I've ever seen. Like,
it looks like a shirt. You know, like, yeah, when you get those like tattoo sleeve shirts.
Dude, it looks so bad. Like, I honestly like don't know how they didn't do like a screen test for that and be like, nah, we can't do that. It looks too bad. Because it looks so bad. It's like distractingly bad. Every time I saw it, I was like, what the fuck is
that? It looks like he's in universe wearing fake tattoos. You know what I mean? Like,
exactly. Yeah, it's fucking terrible. Anyway.
So then they're like,
also this has, I don't know, Gogs, if you'll pick this up. If Alec was here, he would get it. The scene where he's playing the trumpet on the beach or whatever looks suspiciously like the scene the first episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine where Sisko's flashing back to being on the beach with his wife going, ow! Like, it's really bad.
Oh, I have no point of reference there, but I'll trust that is true. So then he gets... So these guys come through and just myrtillate everybody. They ventilate his wife's brains out her head. He's just kind of curled up on the bathroom. And that's sort of like the end of... You can sort of see, like, oh, this is sort of the tragic demise of his wife.
The fucking tone shift in this movie is fucking insane. It's all like, over it the place. So you're gonna wild. Get
whiplash.
Yeah, we're done fucking around now.
Yeah, so all the like fake JFK pigeon shooting is over with. Now it's turned into like a serious movie out of nowhere.
So now he's in the car with the dirty cops, and they're like, "All right, well, go do your thing. We expect you to be wherever." He's like, "All right, cool." And he gets out of that car. I don't think that they have gone but two blocks away, maybe. And he hops into BD Wong's F-350 Ranch King. And he's "All right, you ready to meet the team?" Because, and then it turns out that Val Kilmer...
Chinese vehicle on Earth. And I'm just saying that because he is ethnically Chinese, so it is kind of funny.
He is now being brought in by the FBI because he has been a deep cover informant for BD Wong's group to bust up these cops because, and then you find that the two people that shot up the meth lab place that he was before, one of them had a singular red hair on them. And then
that was like so fucking ridiculous. Like,
and then Val Kilmer,
I had to like rewind the movie because I was so confused. I was like, wait, what? Like,
if these weren't two dirty cops, they're just like regular civilians, that would make sense that they would hem them up on such flimsy evidence.
Yeah. So like, there's one red hair. What?
And then he recalls seeing a redheaded man at the gas station before the shooting went down, and then he recalls the ring that guy was wearing, which led him to whatever school that let him connect the dots to this cop guy. And he's like, so then he tells the FBI, I guess, and they figure it out, I guess. And despite a preponderance of evidence that they must have collected on these two cops, that these guys are like clearly bad dudes. They're like, here's what you're going to do. You're going to set up this Pooh Bear bust by thing over at this hotel, and then we're going to get him. All right. He's like, all right, cool. I'm tired of Donnie Brasco going in and leaving a double life. So, and then he goes to Peter Sarsgaard. He's like, oh, by the way, best friend, I'm not your boy. He's like, that's sad and unfortunate, but we're cool. I'm still help you out. And then he gives
tattoo that Sarsgaard gets of his face. I think that's adorable.
Yeah, it's actually pretty accurate. Like, it's not bad. That one's pretty good. So then Peter Sarsgaard, you know, they're like, all right, so then it's bus night. It's opening night of this production. So let's go. Let's break a leg, gang. They tail Val Kilmer to the hotel where he's supposed to meet up with BD Wong, who's got the money, and then Pooh Bear and the cops. And they're all going to come crashing in. But you find out that it's Sarsgaard dressed up like Val Kilmer. And he's like, he says, sorry, but he's going to handle it his own way. he went a long way just decide to suddenly handle his own way.
He is a meth junkie.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
And I just paused myself because I forgot something. There was a prelim buy at Pooh Bear's house where Danny Trejo tried to pocket some money. And then another guy has like a pirate's flintlock pistol and they were going to feed his penis to a hungry badger. But Val Kilmer talks his way out of it. And then he tells Pooh Bear that Danny Trejo is a dick. So who knows what that guy's toast. But meanwhile, when they're dispatching him, Val Kilmer manages to duct tape the pistol underneath the table of Pooh Bear's house. I guess assuming that the man never drops.
I was going to say that gun was there for like a week.
So then
it's very Godfather too.
So then they pull up.
I'm sorry, Gogs. I hate to keep cutting you off. There's a scene where Vincent D'Onofrio feeds Val Kilmer the most disgusting looking breakfast I've ever seen in my life.
It's like a human's brains, but then it's actually
it's like the breakfast from fucking Strange Darling. It's like I'm uncomfortable watching this.
So now he's like he comes rolling in on a motorcycle that he acquired. I don't even know he had a motorcycle in his bag, and he
well, you know how jazz musicians love their hogs.
He rolls up to the Pooh Bear meth lab ranch mansion. And then the dirty cops are following him. So they're like, all right, time to be dirty cops. And so he walks in and there's like a poker game going on. And then all hell breaks loose. Like people are just starting to get clipped.
Hey, like, pause real quick. One more time. Mm-hmm. James Gandolfini is in this movie for no reason. For 8 seconds.
Where is he in that room?
He's in the at the table. He's wearing like Derek Carr level eyeliner for some reason, but he is
Gogs, you neglected to mention that the lead singer of your favorite band, Buck Cherry, is
Oh wow. Oh wait, I also missed another major plot point. Excuse me. He thinks the Colombians or whoever that are coming to come wring his dick out of his ass, because he keeps getting followed by like a BMW through the hood, and he ends up at R. Lee Ermey's house because that's his in-laws, and they've been trying to track him down because they don't blame him for the death of their daughter, and he's like, just leave me alone. I'm handling it myself. This is the Salton Sea. So then that just goes away. So then now we're at the shootout at the methamphetamine corral, and people are just getting blown to bits. Pooh Bear's catching hot ones. People are getting shot to shit. The cops come through doing their thing. At some point, Pooh Bear breaks out a mortar and pestle, and mortar and pestles a meth into a liquid form so that he can shoot up one last time because the place is like burning down. Like, it was all I could think about was that scene in Face Off. It's like, my place is getting fucked up.
So shout the cops, out to Nick Cassavetes, his best role.
Absolutely. Yeah, Val Kilmer catches three in the chest. He's laying there. The cops come through. They're like, all right, well, I guess he's dead. He's wearing a vest because I guess the FBI gave him your tax dollars at work. So then he sends one through what's-his-name's cheek, which I guess downs him because that's the end of it. And then he fights the child molester to the death and meths him in the neck. And then I think he shoots him. Like that's and then everyone's dead. So he's like, all right, I'm going to go back to my apartment and start being Danny Parker again or Steve Van Zandt or whatever the fuck his name is. And then
it's Tom Van Zandt and Danny something or other.
So then fucking plot point from earlier shows back up. Lou Guzman comes in and gut shots him for trying to set him up with the dirty cops. And
Sorry, Gogs. I'm glad Alex not here because I feel like he'd be very mad at this point. The scene where he's getting ready to shoot the child molester cuts back to the guy telling him how many rounds it holds. He's like, it holds seven, or maybe it's eight. Seems like a pretty big fucking difference right now. So he doesn't know. He's like counting, like, do I still have another bullet in here? Which is a pretty cool little trick, like a little formal break. I appreciate it.
Yeah. All right, so because he gets the gun put to his head and he clicks because there's eight rounds. Like, I guess it was eight. So he gets meth in the neck. That's the end of him. Maybe the place burns down. I don't know. He goes back to his house. He catches one in the gut. And then dude just burns the whole building down because it's an apartment. And so that's when the movie opens, where you got him just playing trumpet sadly by himself. And then his meth friends come and save him. He goes to the hospital. He recovers. He throws his trumpet in the ocean. And now he's going to start a new life, I guess, doing a kung fu thing, like wandering the earth, solving people's problems. That's going to be a bomb.
That's
like,
the movie.
It's like, without a job or a place of residence, that's what you are. You're a bum.
I do love his little voiceover, and it's like, Tom got his revenge. Good for him. Danny was a fucking rat, and he got shot in the gut. That sucks for him. I did like that.
I mean, it's fun. Like, yeah. Here's the thing. The movie's fun. Like, I don't hate the movie, but it's like, it could use polishing up.
It's like a fucking mess, but it's an endearing mess, I think.
I appreciate the incredibly abrasive hard tone shift. Normally I hate that, but there's something endearing about it in this. Like, are you guys getting bored? Hang on.
Yeah, but like, we're going to keep throwing weird shit at you the entire time.
It suffers from, and Goggs is right, and then he remembers that. It's not like a better crafted script would have these things peppered throughout. You know, little bits.
Yeah.
You don't know fucking anything until he decides 10 minutes before the end of the movie.
Yeah.
All this shit happened.
Yeah. Honestly, I've seen this movie a bunch of times. I fell asleep at the end of the movie because I was like, wait, did I miss all this? Because they just revealed all that shit like right at the end. I'm like, wait, what? Like, and it wasn't. They speed run plot right in the last 45 minutes.
I've seen this movie a bunch of times, and this is not a situation where it's like, oh, if you were paying attention, you wouldn't know. It's just like, oh, this is all the shit that was going on.
Yeah. There was no breadcrumbs. There was no clues. It was like, it's wild. I mean, like I'm saying, I don't hate it. But it's just like a mess. No. But Val Kilmer's great in it. Like, I like him in it. Like, D'Onofrio's a lot of fun in it. Like, Sarsgaard's great in it. Like, people are good in it. It's just like,
it is a very, like, whoever said it, I think you both did. It's a very, like, I wrote this when I was 20. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. It's a young man. Like I'm saying, 18 year old me would have eaten this movie up. I'd be like, you guys have got to see The Salton Sea. Like, what a thought-provoking.
This was a Hollywood Video pre-owned stack of 5 for $20 or whatever that I bought with like a snap cover.
This is a much better version of the Boondock Saints.
Yeah.
This is like, you know what I mean?
Or I don't know if it came through because I was kind of shitting out, but like The Way of the Gun earlier.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
This movie financially was a nightmare.
Yeah. I was totally unaware of it until I picked it up out of, like, you know, that, like I said, the aforementioned Hollywood Video or Blockbuster or whatever it was that I just cold bought it.
I think that this was a $18 million budget, box office $1.1 million.
I didn't even know it got a theatrical release. I thought this was like a straight to video movie.
No, and I think, I don't know, this was like, I'm trying to look at Val Kilmer's career. Was this like sort of the doldrums before he kind of made a resurgence, or was this, where is this?
No, this is, I mean, he
is this peak Kilmer?
No, I wouldn't say it's peak. This is like the tail end of his career.
I mean, this came out in 2002. We were like 21. So it is like that was right in the wheelhouse for me for this kind of movie, especially like a somewhat hard-boiled noir movie. It's like hard-boiled in the way that, like, I forgot to turn the shit on high, so I'm going to turn it on as high as possible and just try and fast boil it.
Like, yeah, 100%.
I'm just looking at what he did after this. There was any Wonderland was after this, which I remember I liked, but no one else did.
I hated that movie.
The actual documentary that is much better.
Kiss, Kiss, Bang, Bang. Oh, he made that after this?
But that was like, but wasn't that like, oh, it's those guys coming back, Robert Downey Jr. and Val Kilmer. They haven't been in anything good in forever.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that was sort of like, right? Yeah. And then I guess it was
Dave Perry still might be one of the best side characters in any movie.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That movie's great.
Yeah, and then he kind of fell off. Like, there was, I remember Gun. We watched Gun. And
I watched the wrong Gruber. 50 you Cent Val Kilmer movie. Gun,
yeah.
What was the movie we watched where 50 Cent was like the computer guy and it was like fucking made no sense? Or was that movie that I watched?
I think it was that movie. I think, yeah.
Oh, Gogs.
Oh,
do you remember reviewing the movie Year of the Dragon with Mickey Rourke? Because TJ's like, we did that, didn't we? I was like, no, I mean, we've talked about it a bunch, but apparently we did do it.
I don't recall that. Yeah. That could have been
We've done so many movies.
Apparently, in May of 2019, we reviewed Year of the Dragon with Mickey Rourke, where he's like a fucking Vietnam vet, private detective, or some shit.
Do not recall,
because we've talked about it on the show with Mickey Rourke's baller ass apartment. That's when he had that amazing apartment.
No.
Yes.
No. That was
Showdown Lundgren in Showdown Little Tokyo.
Oh. No, well, he also had a baller ass apartment.
Or what was that one we watched where it was like a lady reporter and she had the most baller ass apartment ever? She had like a swimming pool in her apartment
Might be Year of the Dragon, maybe. I don't know.
Oh, was it?
But anyway, I'm going to have to rewatch it just to remember, because I don't remember anything. All right, let's get in Five Knuckle Shuffles. I'm starving. I need to eat. Sean, your pick, go.
Seven?
Yeah. That's correct.
It's not a good movie. Well, it's not bad, like, in that it's boring or that it's, well, it's not very original in general, but it's like acute bad, you know, it's like clumsy bad more than it is like, it's a cute girl that, you know, trips over everything and breaks all your shit. I don't know. Like, I appreciate like what it's trying to do. It's not good at it. It's like, I don't know, like a really good Special Olympics basketball game.
Yeah. Yeah. High marks.
But then at the end, they bring in LeBron James for like the last quarter. I don't know. Like, it's got a bunch of shit that I like. None of it really fits together. Like the Adam Goldberg scene, I still don't understand what the point of that was, other than like, aren't these guys goofy? Like, let's just cut away to like this weird like Baby Driver thing in the middle of it, and like they like disappear from the movie, right?
Completely, they're gone.
And it, I don't know,
like, if they were part of a movie, like a different draft of the movie. I don't know.
Yeah, and like I had I think I was trying to say it earlier, but I don't know if I cut out, so stop me if I did. But like, where we grew up in the middle of like the heroin crisis, and later to become the opioid crisis, meth wasn't really a thing, so this was all kind of strange for me. Like, I knew what, like, speed was, obviously, from, like, Hunter S. Thompson books. But to kind of see this drug culture, even though it is uniquely glamorized, it was everybody's, like, kind of fuckable in the meth house.
Yeah,
kind of too very fuckable.
Yeah, they were, like, the hottest, like, meth heads I've ever seen. Yeah. Like, it was, like,
everybody had all their teeth.
Does not look that bad.
This movie has, like, 80s and 90s jank in 2002. You know what I'm saying? So, I appreciate that. But it's not great. It's not like a good recommend. I have a lot of like affinity for it because of when I saw it, and I still enjoyed it. And you know, the shit, the I Am the Ocean and the fucking, you know, the Kennedy assassination, and he's got his nose on crooked and it's like, hey, stick your dick in this badger cage. Like, all that shit's fun. BD Walt, hey y'all, like, that shit's all fun. But it's just not like a great film, you know.
No.
It's just not in the noir canon. But they also don't make movies like this. We say that a lot, but they don't. You're never going to get a movie like this again.
Oh, I totally agree with that. Yeah.
So, surprising you got,
to be honest,
shit. This is a movie that would have gotten bought by fucking, I don't know, Hulu or somebody, and distributed that way. You know what I mean? This is a movie that's sat on a shelf for 2 years. And some streaming service bought the rights for, you know, pennies on the dollar.
Yeah, agreed.
Gogs.
It's also a 7. It's, I'd never seen it before. Like I said, I don't hate it. I'm not mad at it. It's just, the second half of the movie just takes such a weird turn, and just like everything's just connected with just like rubber bands and duct tape. Like, it's just this loosely assembled on the backside to like make the plot proceed as you could have. Like, it's literally like someone's just making it up as they're going along. Like, they mad libbed it at the end, but it's fun. I like Val Kilmer in it. It's something. It's just like, there's a better movie here that could have been made, but they made this. So here we are. Like, it's,
but a better movie might not be as charming.
No, you're right. This has got like, it's the jank does provide some charm. It's very of its time. Like I'm saying, this is a young man's like film bro, like, man, what a smart. I didn't like see somebody that coming, and like
loves this movie. You this know what I mean? This is somebody's whole like identity.
Favorite movie, yeah. Right? Like they are Danny Stevens or whatever the fuck. Like it's like they've got the tattoos, like they've so got all of the skull rings because that's a lot of skull.
He looks like a gay prostitute in this, right? Like, am I?
Yeah. He does not read meth head or musician. He just looks like a gay prostitute. Yeah. Yeah.
No, but it's a, you know, it's wild. It's a seven. It's just the strangest goddamn thing.
Like if you cut his head off, every twink in West Hollywood would die. Like that kind of thing.
Yeah. Like he's the twink prime.
Yeah.
TJ.
I'm going to go slightly different than everybody, but not by too much. It's a six for me. Hmm. I didn't like it enough to put it in seven territory. I think there's a lot of memorable parts in this movie just because it's such a fucking mess. But, like, it doesn't come together very well. And honestly, like, the parts that, like, when it turns, like, tries to turn serious, like, I kind of turn off of it. Like, I just didn't. I don't know, man. Like, I thought that, like I liked Vincent D'Onofrio. I liked the weird Kennedy assassination stuff. Like, this feels like, in the same way that, like, people that don't watch David Lynch movies, where they're like, anything weird is, like, yeah. David Lynch. This feels like what somebody would imagine a Quentin Tarantino movie is without understanding what a Quentin Tarantino movie is.
Like a four episode, like not quite Red Shoe Diaries, but something that would come on HBO in the late 90s, like show, like The Hitchhiker or something.
I agree with that. I don't hate this movie at all. I found it to be a pretty entertaining watch, but it's just such a fucking mess. I can't really go higher than a six on it. I didn't love it, but I didn't hate it. And I think, like, again, it is memorable. Like, Vincent D'Onofrio is great in it. Val Kilmer is doing something. I don't know if he knows what movie he's in, because, like, but also his character doesn't make any sense. So, like, you know what I mean? Like, the movie is basically like a noir revenge plot, but, like, the revenge isn't revealed until, like, the last, what, 20 minutes of the movie. You're like, oh, wait, what? Like, it's the structure of this movie is, like, insane. Like, if you told me that the director dropped off halfway through and they had to, like, piece something together, I would believe that, because, like, the movie just does not feel coherent in any capacity. But it was still a fun watch overall. It's a good bad movie, I would say. It's a fun bad movie. There's a lot of fun things to see in this movie. It's just not very good. So, yeah, that is The Salton Sea. And next week is my pick, I believe.
That's correct. Yeah.
And we are sticking with Mr. Vincent D'Onofrio, but I am changing my original idea. I'm going way back in his filmography to a movie I didn't even know he was in. I am picking Tim Burton's Ed Wood. Vincent D'Onofrio, he plays Orson Welles in Ed Wood, which I don't remember at all.
No.
I haven't seen Ed Wood in years. I've always thought that was Tim Burton's best movie. So I'm worried about watching this again, because I haven't watched
it. I've never seen it.
Oh, wow. I mean, I love it, but I haven't seen it in probably 10 years. But I used to really love this movie. So I'm hoping it holds up.
There's a great dialogue exchange where he's talking to a woman. And he's like, you want to go on a date? And she's like, I thought you were a F-slur. And he's like, nope, I'm just a transvestite. Like, that shit's so funny.
Wildly progressive for the time. But yeah, no, it's a, I, you know, this is back when I like Tim Burton. It's back when I like Johnny Depp. I'm excited to see it. Martin Landau as Bela Lugosi is amazing. Yeah. I remember. I'm excited to watch this again. And again, I had no idea he was even in this
movie. I don't remember Orson Welles being in this movie whatsoever, but I haven't seen it in Dog's Age.
Apparently Vincent D'Onofrio plays Orson Welles. So there's our thread. Next week, Ed Wood, and that's the show, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Right.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.